Welcome to season 2, episode 4 of the Depression Diaries. I am Daniel. I am your host. And today we're doing something a little different than we have been doing. Today, I have for you all a fan submission, a listener submission, detailing some of his struggles with depression when he found out that he was struggling with it when he first heard the voice of depression. He goes through quite a bit. He does so very eloquently. Can't wait for you guys to hear his story. I hope that it's helpful for some of you. And also, I want everybody to keep in mind that I'm always available to hear your stories. If you ever want to send me, whether it's a recording, whether you want to email me, feel free to do so. My email address is in the show notes. Like I said, thank you guys so much for listening. I have not been able to record recently, just with everything going on with this quarantine, and it hasn't happened, but I do look forward to getting back to a regular recording schedule. Can't wait to hear from you guys some more. It's been wonderful, you know, getting emails, getting voice messages from everybody. You know, it's been really heartwarming to hear from as many of you as possible. You know, these times are tough for everybody, and particularly for those, you know, who struggle with any sort of mental health issue. So with that being said, I want to get right into this listener's story. He has to remain anonymous. So here we are going to call him Robert. And can't wait for you to hear Robert's story. Thank you.
The thing in my brain that hates me. I am 10 or 11 years old. We live in a small rented house in Louisville, Kentucky. I am helping my mother move an old wood or metal couch. Neither of us are strong enough to move it by ourselves, nor will it easily fit through the door. I have a strong desire, born of hope, to help my mother get our house the way she wants it. Maybe then, I thought, she'll be happy, she'll smile, she'll laugh with me. I slowly rotate the couch such that it is standing on its end, and once I get it vertical, I lose control of it. It starts to fall toward my mother and hits the wall above her head with a loud, resounding crash, and I can't see her behind the couch. I cry out, frightened, "Mom, did that hit you?" She answers, her voice saturated with pain, but not physical pain. "No, but I wish it had, and I wish it had killed me." I sense the tremendous desperation in what she has said. I run to her and say, imploringly, "Mom, I love you." She looks me square in the face and says with genuine venom, "I don't want your kind of love." I have no idea what to say, and I spend the rest of the day trying to be invisible. There are many days that I tried to be invisible. Now, many years later, I realize how deeply depressed she must have been, how desperate she must have felt, and how helpless she must have perceived herself to be in possibly changing the situation. Shortly after this event, she disappeared for several months. She went away to become an inpatient in what was then called Our Lady of Peace Psychiatric Hospital. Throughout my childhood, she disappeared into various psychiatric hospitals multiple times. Occasionally, I would get to visit her, but not often. When I did, she was nervous and uncertain, and would usually show me a belt or a small clay figure she had made. I remember hoping that the time she spent making these things would help her. I was a child, and I had no idea what these hospital admissions really entailed. Over her various psychiatric admissions, my mother received more than 150 shock treatments or electroconvulsive therapy treatments. They may have helped her, but I really don't know. I do know that, because of these treatments, huge sections of her memory of our lives together, of our family, our home, and her children simply disappeared. As an adult, I realize how hard she worked to love me and my siblings the best she could in spite of her illness. I think often of the tremendous honor that exists in that effort, the internal pain she carried, that she sometimes expressed in anger and condemnation, was not something that she was ever able to completely remove from her soul. As a child, I felt it was my absolute duty to help her heal, to help her escape from that relentless pain in her mind and in her very being. Of course, in pursuing that quest, I was doomed to failure. But children don't know this, and I suppose there was at least some honor in the trying. There are hundreds of stories that are similar to this one, but the stories themselves are just moments in time. Thousands of people have stories like these, and far, far worse. They are part of the tapestry we weave in our minds to remember our lives, but they are far less important than learning why her mind was so full of pain and despair. In trying to learn as much as I can about the factors that brought about my mother's illness, I have studied the family history through whatever means are possible. I have read their old letters, I have found forgotten diaries in attics, and I've spent hours examining their faces and body language in old crumbling photos. As I have come to know them more as people and not just distant names, not even memories, I have concluded that many of them were severely depressed and lived their lives self-medicating, usually through alcohol, and doing all they could to face a life that might never be free of pain, sadness, and anxiety. Who I am is at least partially due to the genetic legacy they left me. I have received their curly hair, their short stature, perhaps their intelligence, but I have also, unfortunately, inherited their tendency to experience clinical depression. If you're fighting this fight, this war against depression, and understand it is a war, it is very important to realize that there is much more to the disease than just sadness. Sadness is at least a normal emotion, and often it makes perfect sense. It can help a healthy mind heal, and as it fades, it can help us better appreciate our lives, those we love, and the genuine wonder that does exist in the world. There is something far more damaging than the sadness, at least with me. There is a personal, agency-driven, internally interactive aspect of it. And that aspect of the disease can be a genuine nightmare. I don't want to sound too dramatic, but in plain simple words, there is a thing in my brain that hates me. It hates me as much as anything can be hated. Its hatred is not rational, and it cannot be bargained with. I can only assume that the goal of the thing that hates me is my ultimate destruction, my ceasing to be. It has become blindingly clear to me that if I want to live a life with any kind of quality, that I will, for as long as I live, be engaged in daily battle with this thing in my brain. To not fight, literally, is to die, is to cease to be. I have read that in many ancient societies, there has been a need to name the enemy in order to gain some degree of control over it. I don't want to name this thing. I don't want to give it that degree of respect. I want eventually to kill it. I need that goal. One of the most horrible things about depression is that it can take away your will to fight. It can take away your will to even exist. Hanging on to the goal of killing the thing in my brain is one way of screaming to the universe that I have a right to be, a right to a life, and all that that involves. I don't want peace with it, I don't want coexistence with it. I don't want an understanding. I want it dead. I can't remember the exact age when I first heard its voice. I can't remember exactly when I first felt the coldness and emptiness that it clearly wishes me to feel. I think it probably whispered to me by the time I was 9. I think it spoke with a bit more volume and clarity by the time I was 15. But by the time I was 30, it was a constant cacophony in my mind. It would say, "You are nothing. You have no value. There is nothing good about you. It would be better if you were dead. They can't love you. No one can love you. No matter how hard you try, you will fail." It would go on and on. The thing's vocabulary is pretty small and not very sophisticated. It is a cudgel, not an elegantly designed weapon. But if a cudgel is used to beat your mind, your concept of yourself, your belief in your place in the goodness of creation, it takes a toll. It takes a major toll. When there are multiple painful, stressful, and negative events, the thing in my brain that hates me becomes much stronger. I believe it is likely that the thing will always be a part of me, part of my psyche, part of my soul, if you will. 5 or 6 times in my life it has become strong and pervasive and terrible. Each time it arises, it seems to be stronger than the last time it made itself known, the last time it attacked. I have found a medication that over time takes away some of its power, but I've never found a medication that eliminates it. Therapy has helped a few times, but personally, I have found it to be very formulaic and very repetitive. There may be additional things for me to learn from it, but if one wishes to win a war, one does not discard any potentially useful weapon. But the bottom line comes down to fighting the thing in my brain with every bit of my soul, every bit of my strength, and every bit of my being. There is an inescapable aloneness to depression. No one else can hear the thing in my brain that hates me. No one else can experience the undeserved power that it can have. It's my personal ancient enemy. It's the hyena stalking the lion in the shrouded darkness. But the goal of silencing it, of killing it, even damaging it, of just having a dozen days in a row when there is no merciless attack in my mind, no words of hatred towards me, must be, at this point in my life, the overarching goal of my existence. The thing in my brain that hates me wants me to believe that every person I have ever cared about hates me also. Or perhaps even worse than hatred, it wants me to believe that they are simply indifferent to me, that their lives would be unaffected, unchanged, if I ceased to exist. I am Catholic. I believe in a loving God. I also believe in the primacy of physical causality. I believe that my prayers are heard and that God loves the soul, that is me. I also believe that in the end, I have the ultimate responsibility of controlling and strengthening my mind. I have always found the Bible to be a part of that effort, and there is a verse that I memorized long ago from the book of John, chapter 8, verse 44. You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. I am certain that many people reading or listening to this have their own things in their brains that hate them. I have to remind myself every day that the thing is a liar. The thing is nothing but a liar. If it ever touches the truth, it is only for the purpose of making a malicious lie more powerful. Fight it. If it won't be silent, understand that it lies and does nothing but lie. I don't know why it's there, but I believe that there is at least some power in acknowledging that it is, and in telling anyone who will listen that I will not give it free rein. I do matter. I do have value. I am worthy of being loved and loving. So I will fight this damn thing until there is no life left in me, or until it is dead. There is simply no other rational or honorable choice.
I want to thank all of you for listening to Robert's story, and I want to thank Robert for submitting this story and being brave enough to tell it. It is really difficult to name the thing that comes after us in our mind, and it's difficult to pursue that war day in, day out. We applaud Robert for keeping the fight going. It's the most important war that one can fight. It's the one in your mind. I'll be doing the same, as I hope everyone is. Anyway, again, thank you to everyone who's listening, everyone who has been reaching out. I look forward to receiving any and all feedback, submissions, stories of any sort. Feel free to lay them on me. Again, thank you all for listening. Until next time, goodbye.